With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
Tom Nelson is a climate energy podcaster. He's also the producer of Martin Durkin's 2024 film, Climate the Movie. He has a Master of Science degree in electrical and electronics engineering. He's moved in tech and software for many years. Since July 2022, Tom has done over 200 episodes of the Tom Nelson podcast. Guests have included people like Judith Curry, Ivor Cummins, Malcolm Roberts, Ian Plimer, and Patrick Moore. The film exposes the climate alarm as an invented scare without any basis in science. It shows that mainstream studies and official data do not support the claim that we are witnessing an increase in extreme weather events, hurricanes, droughts, heat waves, wildfires, and all the rest. It emphatically counters the claim that current temperatures and levels of atmospheric CO2 are unusually and worryingly high. On the contrary, it's very clearly the case, as can be seen in all mainstream studies, that compared to the last half billion years of Earth's history, both current temperatures and CO2 levels are extremely and unusually low. And he says we're currently in an ice age, so I'll ask him about all that because he's joining us. Tom, thanks for coming in on our radio station today. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Okay, now there's so much to ask you about, but I always like to ask for this big picture. Why do you think we're so crazy about climate? I mean, there's so many things to be worried about, to anticipate as problems for our local communities and humanity, but we're fixating on the climate. Can we explain that somehow?
Yeah, I do think that there are elites whose there needs to be a global problem, and they seized upon this decades ago. They kind of decided that this can be the global problem, that they can control us, and it's such a good way to get additional money and power. And yeah, of course, there's no evidence at all that supports any of this alarm, but there's tons of people who are getting power and money from it, and I think that's a big part of it. And the feeling that they're saving the planet. There's a lot of people that actually believe that part of it, too. That's another motivator.
It's the perfect issue, isn't it, if you want to deploy something that can achieve a particular result? Because, like you said, saving the planet, who's going to argue?
Right. Who's going to argue? And there's no deliverable, though. I'd say that we could spend $50 trillion. We can go live in caves and everything. 50 years from now, there's going to be no measurable benefit in weather or climate. But what they're going to say is, oh, you're welcome, because it didn't get way worse. And if we wouldn't have done all this stuff, then it would have gotten way worse. But there's no measurable deliverable here.
And the history of climate prediction and science, how's that evolved since it was a thing? Because there have been a lot of predictions, you know, dire predictions. And if you look at the fossil record, it goes back quite some way.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back at any length of time, you can see just enormous amounts of bad weather and disasters have happened all the time. Throughout human history, as far as we know, every single year, a lot of horrible stuff has happened. And there's no evidence at all that anything that's happening now is worse than it was 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago. So the whole idea that let's panic because there was a storm somewhere, it's totally crazy. I've been down all the rabbit holes myself, looking at cyclones and looking at floods and droughts and fires. And if you look at it, there's no signal there at all. It's not getting worse. And some could even argue that in some cases it's getting a little better, but it fluctuates naturally, and that's the way it goes. And it's not caused by humans ever. The bad weather is not caused by humans.
Well, that's a relief. All right. In terms of the Earth and how its climate operates, and it's complicated, are we, you know, influential enough as humans doing what we do to really make any difference to that? Or are we dwarfed by all the other processes? I'm just trying to get an idea of where we sit, you know?
Yeah, it's controversial whether we're making any measurable difference. For sure, we have to make some difference, or just a butterfly flapping its wings and a rose growing and everything makes some difference. But is it measurable? We don't know. There's a whole idea that humans must have caused all the warming since the Little Ice Age. So if we never existed, the Little Ice Age would still be ongoing. But I'm not buying that at all. I mean, there's been all sorts of fluctuations in the temperature on Earth just since 1850 or so. And if it was just CO2 as the climate control knob, like that's the narrative, then it should just keep warming every year since 1850 or whatever. But it hasn't. It's gone up. It's gone down. I've had a lot of people on my podcast arguing that it probably will go down. I wouldn't doubt at all between now and 2100, we may well see a 30-year period of cooling just because we've seen so many of those in the past and natural variability hasn't stopped. So, yeah, CO2 is not the climate control knob. Humans are not controlling the climate, but they are some having some effect.
So where did CO2 come onto the scene?
A long time ago, I think like Arrhenius, there was a guy back in the late 1800s, I believe, that had some calculations saying that CO2, additional CO2 should warm the planet somewhat. But he also went on to say that this would be a good thing because warmth is good for life on Earth. And throughout human history, warm periods have for sure been better for humans and for life on Earth than cold periods. Even the recent little ice age back in the 1850 or so, or a little earlier, that was a bad time for life on Earth because cold is generally the enemy of life in general. And the idea that we want shorter growing seasons and less CO2 in the air, that doesn't make any sense at all. So Arrhenius, even back at the start, he was saying, yeah, I think CO2 is going to warm the Earth somewhat, and that's a good thing.
It used to be global warming was the term, and that seems to have morphed into the climate crisis, other labels. Is that a tell on a modification of a narrative that's not working out a particular time? So you modify it, make it more broad or more diffuse, but you carry on pushing the same thing.
I think it is. We don't know for sure who changed it from global warming or who changed the emphasis to climate change, but they keep changing it. And there was definitely a push towards trying to change it to global weirding. Like Catherine Hayhoe kept saying global weirding, but that did not catch on because that was just too stupid. But with climate change, that's a little easier to sell because then you can blame even cold weather and warm weather on it. If it's not so easy to sell cold weather as a sign of global warming, but they're for sure trying that too. But none of it makes any sense.
And people can visualize huge lines of traffic belching fumes and ships belching, you know, bunker fuel. It's easy to take it on board, isn't it?
It is, but the whole idea that they try to sell you the idea that black smoke, like CO2 looks like black smoke and it's making the air dirty, but that's not what it is. CO2 is invisible, it's colorless, and it's harmless, so you can't see it. There's maybe 420 parts per million in the air outside here, and as you and I are breathing, we're breathing out something like 40,000 parts per million, about 100 times as much CO2 as it is outside. So a lot of people that are worried about this, they think that air is kind of filling up with CO2, but it's really like 0.04%. About just a tiny little fraction. There's more argon out there in the air right now than there is CO2. Way more argon. And nobody cares about argon because who cares?
Yeah. It's the argon crisis. When did you get interested in this issue and it got you all the way to making the doco that we're going to talk about, or the film, very shortly? How did you arrive here?
It's close to 20 years ago. It's pushing 20 years. I considered myself a normie back around 2005 or so, where I was kind of believing whatever the mainstream media said. And I remember seeing the graphs showing that the temperature was spiking up. And I remember thinking, oh no, that looks like a problem. But scientists probably have figured this out. And I totally bought it at that time. But I didn't like do any climate marching or anything. I just bought it. A lot of people, I think, to this day think that it must be true because experts said it's true. But around 2005, there was an ivory-billed woodpecker rediscovery. I don't know if you read about this at all in the U.S. It was
no, but
huge.
I know you're a bird watcher, so I'm not surprised.
I'm a bird watcher. Yeah. So there's this huge woodpecker, and it had been rediscovered. It was extinct for like 60 years or something, and then supposedly they rediscovered it. But there was a official paper in Science magazine. There were 17 authors, and it was peer reviewed. So it was truth with a capital T because it's in Science magazine. It must be true. But as a bird watcher, I looked into it and I found out it was complete crap. There was no evidence to support it. They had a 6-pixel picture, two blacks, two whites, and two blacks again, 6 pixels. And that was supposed to be evidence of an extinct woodpecker. And then they had a couple of little tapping, like a couple double taps on trees. And they're going, oh, this must be an ivory-billed woodpecker because what else could cause two taps on a tree? Completely crazy. Total groupthink. There was no evidence. And then some guy wrote to me and said, you know, you should look into the global warming thing now that you've looked into this, because it's the same deal with global warming, that if you look into that evidence, again, it's tremendously flimsy. So right away, when I looked into that evidence for myself, I was shocked to find out that the evidence did not support any alarm whatsoever. Pretty amazing.
want to ask you a question that's unrelated, but you're talking bird watching. I love aeroplanes, anything that flies, actually, birds. What is it about birds for you? Just curious.
It's so fun. I mean, I'm really enjoying doing this with my daughter. She's in her early 20s, and it's just something we can do together. And you can do it all the time, like just walking around with my dog year-round. The birds keep changing, at least here in Minnesota, that they're singing, and the different ones show up at different times. And we have feeders out here. There's just a lot of variety, and there's a lot of beauty in both the sights and the sounds. I just totally love it. I've been doing it for a long time. It's very fun.
That's cool. I might try a bit. Rather than go to the airport, I go to the forest.
There you go. They're everywhere. The birds are everywhere.
You mentioned that, you know, that really low-res picture and a sort of an assumption made on virtually nothing, sort of fumes. That also seems to be a pattern too, where the evidence is never really strong, but it doesn't seem to matter, you know?
Yeah, it's very much like that. I mean, I'm looking at social media everywhere. For close to 20 years, I've been kind of reading about this for hours for most days. I just see the same things over and over. Oh no, there was a really bad fire someplace. And they haven't had a really bad fire for 30 years or whatever. Or there was a heat wave, or there was an early frost. A lot of times it's stuff like that, or it snowed so much in June or something. Well, how did that happen? And there's just an assumption that the weather should be normal every day. And if the weather isn't normal every day, if it's something you haven't seen before, that indicates a problem. And then there's a leap towards the humans caused that problem. But as you read back in history, people are constantly saying that. People back in 1750, if you read what they're saying, I can't believe what just happened because I've never seen this before. But the weather is very variable, and we can't make the leap because something unusual happened that we must have caused it, or it's bad in the long term, or it's a sign that things are going to, the bad weather is going to continue. Just sometimes it's bad, sometimes it's good. It's nothing new.
I've noticed in our media that they connect any weather event that is not normal with climate change generated. And I'm wondering if that kind of connects with the psychology of people who are living in this modern world where things are relatively safe. I guess that's speaking more to the point you just made, that they are safe. It's kind of a cotton wool wrapped world now compared to how it used to be only a few generations ago, let's say. So anything that is perceived outside normal is, you know, a threat, danger, scary. And that seems to be, that's leveraged, isn't it, by the climate change movement?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is a great point, that this is way easier to sell to people that are 20 and they don't really go outside that much. And if you tell them, models say that something bad's happening, they kind of take that on faith. But my dad is in his 90s, and he's been a farmer almost all that time. And he remembers how cold it was in 1965. He remembers the Dust Bowl. He was a kid during the Dust Bowl here in the 30s. He remembers how hot it was and how dusty it was, even here in Minnesota. So it's really hard to sell to him the idea that whatever just happened is super unusual and it's never happened before, because he's kind of seen it all. I mean, it's a human lifetime is very short, but even in that lifetime of his, he's seen so much variability that he's not buying this whole thing that the weather is worse now than it was in the 1940s, for example, because he saw the 1940s.
Yeah. But here's another thing. You see it with your own eyes, but don't believe your own eyes. It's almost to that level.
Yeah, I mean, there is this thing, interesting dynamic from Patrick Moore called Fake Invisible Catastrophes. He wrote a book by that name. And that's a major thing that's used to sell this whole scam, is that the catastrophes that they sell us are always really far away, because everybody goes through their life. There's not a climate crisis going on anywhere. There's some bad weather, but nowhere on Earth is there actually a climate crisis. But they're trying to tell you that someplace far away, like at first it was the polar bears. Hardly anybody's going to go up there and check. And if you tell them the polar bears are dying because of CO2, you might take that on faith. Or for a lot of people, it's the Great Barrier Reef. If you tell them the horrible things are happening there and they live 5,000 miles away, they might just believe it. But the crisis is not happening in anyone's backyard where you can look at it for yourself, because there is no crisis.
I remember seeing something about polar bears and how they're hanging around, you know, small towns and encampments in the north because climate change is affecting the food supply, right? And they do that. And then I heard someone say, well, it's because it's easy food. People just throw it out the back. And of course, that's the most logical explanation.
It's easy food. And there are more of them than there were in the 70s. Well, and I think the reason is we're shooting less, but we don't know for sure, but it looks like there might be maybe four times as many now as there was at the very low in the 60s, let's say, because of a reduced hunting. But the latest figures I have seen, I think we're still killing maybe 900 a year or something. We might have 30,000 of them. We're killing a significant percentage of them, and we can get away with it because they're doing well and CO2 is not killing them off at all.
We just won't mention that conveniently. All right, so your journey to making this movie, What took you to that? Was there a moment when you thought, I'm going to make a movie about this? And that's a sort of a pushback against the mainstream media, isn't it? And I guess to be able to push back effectively, you have to make a very good movie.
Yeah. So I just lucked into it. Martin Durkin made the movie. So I've been a podcaster.
You're the producer.
I'm the producer, but I give the credit to Martin Durkin because he is a veteran documentary filmmaker. He really knows what he's doing. And I started a podcast in July of 22. And one of my early guests was Martin Durkin. I was a huge fan of him because he did 2007's The Great Global Warming Swindle, which stands up to this day. It's a great anti-climate scam movie. So he was on my podcast, and I was just asking him about the movie in 2007. And just out of the blue, he said, you know, if I had the chance, I would love to take some time and make another movie knowing what I know now. So that kicked it off right there, that the two of us got together after that podcast. And shortly thereafter, we kicked off a making of the movie. But he did all the interviews. He traveled around and did the interviews. And he wrote the script for the movie. And he did the narration. And he is very good at what he does. And he produced a wonderful movie. He gets the credit for that. I helped him out on the side. I did a lot of logistical stuff on the side. But Martin is a very good filmmaker.
Okay. The experts. You'll have your experts in your movie. The climate crisis people have their experts. Seems to me the word expert, the meaning of it, the true meaning of it, has been totally devalued. Do you think I'm right?
I do think you're right. Yeah, I mean, we've definitely seen that just in the last few years, I think. I think faith in the alleged experts has plummeted. It's plummeted even for me over the last 20 years or so. The whole idea that whatever the media tells us or whatever scientists say is the truth, I think a lot of people are smelling a rat now, and they're way less likely to believe that. Even polling in the U.S. is showing that there's declining belief in the climate scam. Just in the last week or so, a Monmouth poll came out and showed even among youth that there was a big decline in belief in this scam. And I think it's just because people have seen they're lying to us, and they're asking, what else are they lying to us about? Tons of people have personally told me that they've asked that question themselves. What else are they lying to us about? So I think there is a big awakening going on right now.
Yeah, I think you're right. The layering of this. So at the bottom layer, before it hits us, the public, with the messaging and the narratives, is what the, I don't want to use the term, but I will, the useless idiots, let's say, who are sucking off the nutrient stream of the funding, which is way disproportional, isn't it, to anything else out there. As much as they can get, it's all they need to do is say the right things and play the game. They've got the money. But who's above that?
That's a great question, and I don't know for sure. I mean, for one thing, it's just in here in the U.S., it's the U.S. government itself. The government funding is heavily flowing towards the alarmist side, and almost none is flowing towards the other side. And there was a time when Trump was in office that they were talking about having a red team and a blue team, and they were going to fund two different teams and have them compete and come up with competing reports and stuff. And if Trump gets back in, I think there is a chance that would happen. I think that should happen. But yeah, right now, there's all these incentives to go along with the narrative. I think there's tons of scientists right now that don't believe in this climate crisis crap, but they might lose their job, or they might not get their papers published if they say anything. And the easiest thing in the world is just to stand back, don't say anything, don't rock the boat, and continue getting the funding and not get canceled. You can get your social media, you get in trouble on social media if you share climate the movie. Facebook doesn't like it if you do that. You can get in trouble. So the easiest thing is just stand back and pretend you believe. But I think the whole narrative is crumbling right now as we speak. And I'm very happy to see that crumbling going on.
That's interesting what you say, not surprising, about, you know, Facebook not being very happy with the linker, I guess is what you mean. Have you had any explanation, or has anyone talked to you officially about why that would be a problem? Because, I mean, it's the climate. It's not, you know, human rights, let's say, or the war in Gaza or whatever. It's climate. Yet there's censorship.
Yeah, in the case of Facebook and Instagram, they're referring to this smog blog thing, I believe it is. No, it's a science feedback fact check anyway. It's called a fact check. It's written on the science feedback website. It may not be connected to the smog blog, but it's kind of a ghostwritten thing that I've just seen in the last 3 or 4 weeks saying that this is misinformation. Climate the movie has to be misinformation because independent fact checkers at science feedback say it's misinformation. but it's not, it's a ghostwritten thing. There's some guy who's a visual designer. I think his name is Derek Burns, and he is supposed to be the ultimate authority. And he's telling us that he's the gatekeeper and what's true and what isn't. So it's just a really odd thing that the people at Facebook think that this guy or these ghostwritten, this ghostwritten article, that it's the truth. Yeah. And because of that, then you can't share our movie, even though we have a Nobel Prize winner. We're told that that climate science is basic physics. We have the 2022 Nobel Prize winner in physics, John Clauser. He's in the movie calling this thing a crock, but he's getting basically overwritten by this guy who's a visual designer.
Derek sitting in a basement somewhere.
Yeah, Derek has ruled that John Clauser is incorrect. And yeah, we don't really know why. It's very farcical. But I'm happy that our stuff has not been taken down from YouTube or Rumble or BitChute. It's everywhere. I think there's a full 100 copies of our movie up kind of everywhere. Everybody, a lot of people keep downloading it and putting it in various places. So I'm loving the fact that there's no way they can really censor it now without almost taking down the internet. So we are censored in a couple places, but in a place like X or Twitter, we're not censored at all. And that, I'm loving Elon Musk for that he's allowing this us to talk completely freely about this on X. That's a pretty big deal, actually.
Yeah, that took the lid off a lot, didn't it? Him taking over X, and boy, did it!
It did. Yeah.
Out.
Yep. It.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Getting back to the layering, obviously there's power here. You know, there's a lot of power in this. And we've got, you know, the people taking the money, and we've got the politicians who are trying to appeal to their voters and say the things they want to hear, which has been influenced by all the mainstream narrative. But right at the top layer, it's got to be about pure power, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I don't have it straight in my head what's going on at the top level. I've had quite a few people talk about it on my podcast about the UN and the WEF and Morris Strong and the late Morris Strong. But yeah, I think there is a plan that the Bill Gates types would like to use this to use CBDCs, central bank digital currencies, to use the climate stamp to control us. And then we could only fly a certain number of times. And there's a whole C40 cities document that I've just been reading again in the last couple of days that has crazy stuff in it. Like, we'd be limited to 3 pieces of new clothing per person per year. And by the year 2030, their goal is for 0 kilograms of meat per person per year. I just read that again. Zero. And for dairy, 0. You get 0 dairy per year. This is, I guess, to prevent bad weather.
Well, that's
and you get 2,500 calories of food per person per year. So they're going to restrict our calories, or that's their dream, to restrict calories. So it's hard to believe just how crazy this whole thing is, that people think that for our own good, evidently, or for whatever reason, we need to be controlled. And this whole climate scam is a great way to enforce all, or to put all these controls on us, put us in a digital prison. Pretty amazing.
I hope the clothing allowance doesn't include underwear.
I don't know.
Otherwise,
if it does. It
that'd be tough for eat that one out over a whole year. Okay, some questions for you. The Earth, is it too hot at all? Is it too hot?
It is absolutely not too hot. I'm always asking people that. I'm trying to start little debates all the time. And I'm asking, how hot is the Earth? In Fahrenheit, it's maybe 59. I don't know if that's something around 14 centigrade or something. Yeah. But the whole idea that it's too hot is completely crazy. That for most of the last 600 million years, the best data that we have is it has been warmer than that naturally, most of that last 600 million years. And when it has been warmer, it's been good for life. And again, when it's been cold, it's been bad for life. And as Patrick Moore says, right now, we are still in an ice age, where an ice age is defined as if you have ice at the poles, then by some definitions, that's an ice age. And for a lot of the Earth's existence, there has been no ice at the poles. So there's like Antarctica. I just was hearing there's coal in Antarctica. I don't know for sure how that got there, because Antarctica may have moved around over time. But it's been warm enough for crocodiles near the poles. I've been reading that near the North Pole, crocodiles and palm trees and stuff. But anyway, it's been way warmer, and nothing bad happened. It would be way worse if it got a little colder, and we might see some natural cooling, and it might be harder to grow crops in Siberia and Canada. So cooling is the enemy of us. If it cooled a degree or two from here, that would be a big deal. If it warmed a degree or two, I think it would be fine, actually.
You mentioned the ice. That's used a lot too, isn't it? Because people can imagine the ice melting, huge volumes of it, and the sea level goes up. Has there been a sea level rise anywhere?
Yeah.
There?
Yeah, I mean, I've looked at it very carefully, and the official story is it's arisen, the sea levels have arisen maybe 8 or 9 inches since 1870 or so. What would that be, about a tenth of a meter? Is that, no,
yeah,
36,
yeah,
not, a quarter not of a meter.
Yeah.
Yeah, but over the last 200 centuries, seas have risen about 2 feet per century, or a total of 400 feet over 200 centuries. So it rises at different levels, but it does go up, it goes down, and there's nothing alarming that's happened since we started burning coal. And we don't know if that rise that we've seen, how much of that was even due to humans. It might not even be measurable. So a lot of things are affecting local sea levels. The local ground may be rising or sinking. All sorts of things are happening. But it's interesting to me that there's some Roman ports that are maybe 2 miles inland now. The Romans were just using them not that long ago geologically, but now they're way inland. And of course, we've got these stories of there's cities, lost cities, that are now under lots of seawater, and we don't really know why. I guess the something happened to change the local sea levels a lot since then. And there's nothing we can do anyway to stabilize them. Whatever we do, they're still going to keep changing. That's going to keep happening.
I'm just reminded that you can't believe your own eyes thing. We've got an area near where I am right now, which is trying to put a regime in to identify areas that could be inundated. And they're rated, and that rating is put on their property report, which is available to anyone who wants to buy the property and for insurance and bank purposes. And they've put these properties in this inundation zone, yet the residents are saying, I'm looking out my window and the beach is 20 meters further away than it was when we moved here. I mean, this is how crazy it is.
Yeah, completely crazy. Yeah, the whole idea that CO2 controls the sea levels, that's not happening. And the whole idea that something alarming is happening with global sea levels is absolutely not happening. It's not.
Yeah. Okay, so did you have any issues in making the film along the way? Was there people trying to get in the way or slow you down? Or
Yeah. Not really. I mean, I kind of thought we would, but I hadn't seen much of that. Martin does report that some people that worked on the movie, they didn't use their real names in the credits of the movie because they thought that they would get canceled if their actual name showed up. I think that's kind of sad, actually, that you wouldn't want to use your real name and take credit for this movie. And we were a little worried about disruptions as we had some premieres in various places. I went to London, I went to the Netherlands and DC, and we thought that there would be Extinction Rebellion types trying to like throw paint on us or something, but none of that happened. So, and since we released it, the Washington Post, New York Times, the mainstream media hasn't attacked us either. I think they're hoping if they ignore us, we'll go away. So we expected a lot more attacks in general than we've had. So I do think there's kind of a change in the zeitgeist, and people are way more open to this now than they would have been 4 years ago. I think it's a big deal.
Okay, so there was no reporting of it full stop in mainstream media, either negative or positive, or was it mentioned? Did it cut through at all at any point?
I didn't see it from like the Washington Post over here, that type of thing. But there is the Epoch Times over here in the U.S. They're the fourth largest, I think, paid newspaper. They wrote a lot of positive stuff about us because they are open to the idea that the narrative might be wrong. They've done great reporting on it. So, yeah, so they've written about it. There's been a lot of actually good journalists on the internet that have looked at the movie and praised it because it is a very good movie. One interesting thing is there's this guy named Doomberg I don't know if you know about Doomberg. He is an energy expert that he appears on podcasts only as a cartoon chicken because he doesn't use his real name. But he's very much respected because he's got great to smart things to say about energy. But anyway, this guy or guys wrote about climate the movie and said, he gave it high praise and encouraged people to watch it. So the cartoon chicken loves us.
Great. And you can't cancel a cartoon chicken, I guess.
I guess not.
Well, so in terms of making the film, the director, Martin Durkin, how did he have to tell the story? Because you need to engage people, you need to capture their interest, even if they're thinking the other way. How do you roll out a story like that?
Yeah, he's just done it so much that he knows what works in real life. He's been involved, I think, in something like 100 documentaries. He's been involved in a lot of stuff on the Discovery Channel on many different subjects. He's been doing this kind of forever. So he knows how to keep it moving and how to keep things interesting. In the movie, about the first two-thirds are the science, and maybe the last one-third is more like politics. But he uses graphs that are kind of visually attractive, and he snaps to, back and forth. He doesn't linger too long on any one thing, or it doesn't get boring at all to me. And he uses a lot of just kind of funny footage from the past. He uses like dinosaurs fighting and stuff while he's talking. And he's a very good narrator in general. I think he does a really good job of keeping it interesting and packed with good stuff. I think even for people who are really into the climate debate, I think there's a lot of reinforcement in this movie and arguments you can use when it comes up in your daily life. It can help you sharpen your own arguments if you watch the movie.
In your experience podcast in the movie, what is the best way to engage with people on this if you disagree with them? Because I've noticed with COVID, which has been an experience, obviously, we've all been through, you know, the fire hose doesn't work, and maybe the nice gentle watering can doesn't work. Any ideas on the best way to communicate how one would feel or the position on this when you're up against, you know, this huge wall of, do we say misinformation? Well, if it's wrong, it's misinformation. How do you think we can go about that in the best way?
Yeah, I asked Tony Heller about that too, and I totally agree with him that using historical data for me is a very powerful thing, and not try to convince them that the whole thing is a crock from the beginning. I think just convince them that one little thing is a complete crock, and that kind of opens up the door. I think that's a great way to do it. And you can pick anything. Like if they are all worried about wildfires, you can pick that one thing and you can show them data. Like in the U.S., they're trying to scare us about wildfires because they are worse than they were in 1982. You can just show them graphs that show that before 1982, in the 1930s, they were terrible for year after year, way more acreage burned in the U.S. First half of the 20th century was way worse than the second half in terms of fires. Thing, or they talk about they're worried about it was too hot in January and wherever they are. You can show them, you can look up some data and find out that probably it's been a lot hotter in other Januaries 150 years ago, that type of thing. But I think it really does work to just open the door and show them that one thing is wrong, and that opens their mind to think, well, if that one thing is wrong, what else are they lying to us about again? I think that's the way to go.
What about asking questions? I had a moment with a daughter of mine, and she said to me, "Dad, don't you know there's a climate crisis?" And I asked her back. I said, "Well, where did you hear that?" And she couldn't tell me.
Yeah, where did you hear that? Or what evidence around you, what should convince us that there's a climate crisis? Some people say that we can see the climate crisis by looking out our window. I've heard people say that. But I've been looking out my window for a long time, and there's no climate crisis out there. There is not.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So how do you think this is all going to play out then? Because there's all the money, and the people who are benefiting from that aren't going to give it up easily, I would imagine. That's human nature. And the people, whoever they are, the collective they up the top are pulling levers of power, and they want that to happen. So how do you think this will play out, and over what time span do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard to predict, but if I had to guess, I would say that the people who are dug in onto this, if they've gone all in on it, they're going to take this to their graves. They're not going to say, "Oops, I was wrong. This thing I told you about for 40 years was a complete crock." So they're just going to cling to it. But I think in general, I think a lot of people are going to just stop talking about it. I'm already seeing that. There was this Larry Fink from BlackRock, and they put out this... they put out this thing, well, it may have been their annual report or something. It had 29 mentions of climate change as of maybe 3 years ago. And the most recent one had 4 mentions of climate change. So I think it's just going to slowly go away. And at some point, we're going to go, "Huh, whatever happened to that climate change thing?" Because people are not going to, there's not going to be a big moment when everyone agrees and everyone fesses up and says it was all a crock. They're just going to stop talking about it and move on to something else. I think that's what's going to happen. And I think a lot of people who sold this thing to you for years are in the later retelling, they're going to say, "You know, I never really did believe in that crazy stuff anyway." I think there's going to be a lot of revisionist history about that. We've seen that with COVID too already. And that's going to happen with climate too. When it does come up, people are going to say, "Remember how crazy that was? I never believed it."
Well, it'd be sensible to get ahead of it and make your apologies earlier or your confessions earlier than later. Is it fair to say that there's actually a political divide in this as well? I don't know how clear cut that is. Particularly, we see that, you know, in the reporting from the United States, but smaller scale, way smaller scale. It's kind of feels that here. So on one side of the political line, you've got the climate crisis hysteria, and on the let's say conservative side, and I guess that goes with conservative values. You want things to slow down and you don't want things to change too much. That complicates it, doesn't it? Massively, the political division.
It does. But I think that even that's the narrative now. And I don't think the reality is matching up with that at all anymore, because I'm listening to lots of podcasters who are pretty left wing podcasters, and they're coming around. Like Joe Rogan is a big example. I think he was a big Bernie Sanders guy, and Candace Owens brought up the climate thing in 2018, and he was going, "What? You don't believe in it?" And now it comes up a lot in his podcasts, and he scoffs at it. He's laughing out loud at it right now. That's a big change. And I'm seeing that in a lot of places. I'm listening to unrelated podcasts and just climate comes up as an aside. And there's a lot of scoffing going on now that was not happening 3 years ago. So I think it's breaking down. And I think as more and more people step forward and say they don't believe it, then there's safety in numbers. Joe Rogan doesn't believe it. All these other people are scoffing at it. Now it's safe for me to scoff at it. I think it can kind of snowball pretty quickly. And the narrative of everybody believes in it can become everybody doesn't believe in it pretty quickly, actually.
How effective has the film been, do you think? What do you hear back? You know, what's the feedback? What do people say after they've seen it?
We're getting just tons of good feedback. I just have this thing that I wrote down here that a lot of coincidences happened in just a few weeks after the movie came out, that all of a sudden, like, there was this, there's a YouTuber named Sabina Hassenfelter. She's got a huge audience, and she's been talking about how CO2 is so dangerous and stuff. And just a few days after our movie came out, then she posted a video warning about fear-mongering and saying that scientists are taking this too far and let's take a step back, kind of. And there's been quite a bit of that about how people are kind of backing away from it in recent weeks. But we don't know how much of it was caused by the movie and how much was just the general. I think it was already going that way. I think the movie has just helped push it a little bit, or maybe more than a little bit. Hard to say. But the feedback has been great. The number of views has been great.
Can you give us a ballpark?
Yeah, it's hard to say because we have so many copies out there, but it's millions. There's a Wide Awake Media guy who puts up clips and he puts up videos on X, and he just put one copy of our movie, and that tweet got 1.3 million views. There's a lot of copies out there that have hundreds of thousands or more views, many, many copies, and lots of clips and lots of articles and stuff. So definitely millions of views. We're very happy with the reception.
Are you expecting an incoming sort of opposing film to sort of arm wrestle with yours now, or
no? I don't think so. I mean, there's been a lot of films. Leo DiCaprio had them, and Al Gore had some. There's been a lot of films, actually. There was a whole thing on Netflix. I forget what, Extrapolations. They had a lot of big names were in it, and it was heavily pushed. I don't know how many people watched it. So I think they've tried as hard as they can, and this warmest stuff doesn't sell. I've heard that when they put up Greta on mainstream channels, that people don't want to watch that stuff. They want to watch David Attenborough shows about animals. They don't want to hear him lecturing about climate change. They hate that part of it. So it's people are not into it. It's amazing that even I see Al Gore on some videos on YouTube, and the number of views he actually gets is tiny on most of his attempts to sell this thing. Most people are not into this. We're getting the idea. The narrative is everybody believes in it. We're really into it. The youth really believes in it. But that's not the reality. If I go to airports here in the U.S. or elsewhere, they're just absolutely bustling. It's not like people are staying home and there's plenty of traffic on the roads. Almost nobody is living as if they believe in this thing. That is a major tell that I don't see even people who are heavily into it that are lecturing us on that. Even they are living they're burning just as much fossil fuel as I am, probably a lot more.
It's always someone else's problem, right?
yeah. It's important enough for them to tell me to do stuff, but it's not important enough that they need to be inconvenienced. That's different.
Just to wind up, do you think this project is probably the best thing you could do to have some sort of effect?
Yeah, I do. I feel like I am just very lucky. I'm so happy to be able to spend some time with Martin Durkin. I give him the credit. And I do think it's been very effective. I'm just glad that I was in the right place to be at the right time to be a little bit a part of it. But I'm loving it. It's been very fun for me.
Tom Nelson, producer, we'll get that right, of Climate, the movie. Director is Martin Durkin. Thanks for coming on our program and talking about that. It's really interesting. Thanks.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.